From the 1970s through until the early 1990s, inflation was something that people always talked about. Indeed, I think the best definition of getting away from inflation is when people stop talking about it. And sadly, today they are talking about it. And basically, inflation turns a healthy economy into a sick one because it becomes a process of constant catch-up. You know, your wage goes up, then it's my turn later on to bargain a wage. I start to think you're getting paid more than I am. Then you think I'm getting paid more than you. It makes it very difficult for people to work out how expensive things are, whose wage is higher than somebody else's. And that makes it almost impossible for an economy to function because you don't know what the cheapest sources of supply or inputs are, what the cheapest kind of labor is, and what kind of job to take. And certainly when inflation reached over 25% in the 1970s, this was something that really started to wreck the way the whole economy worked.
And your, I mean, your experience at the bank, you know, I know you were governor somewhat later than that, but you can presumably recall the institutional battle with inflation and the aftermath of that. I mean, this was not an easy thing to get back into the box.
It was very difficult. In the 1980s, first of all, people tried to target the behavior of money, and that proved difficult in the early part. Then trying to use an exchange rate as a method of bringing inflation down. In the end, we had to have a very deep recession in the early 1990s to suppress inflation. And after that, when we left the exchange rate mechanism in September 1992, we introduced an inflation target. The Bank of England gained a degree of independent voice. Later, it was made fully independent in 1997. And inflation came down and stayed around 2%. And we've been there ever since until last year. So there was a very successful period in which inflation was brought down and people stopped talking about inflation.
But right now, people, like you say, are talking about it again. Do you feel there are legitimate echoes of that kind of 1970s experience right now?
I think there are. And I think it's a function of ideas. I think there was a serious mistake in the 1970s in which people thought that, well, if we accept a bit more inflation, we can have higher employment and output in the economy. That turned out to be false. And then, of course, that mistaken idea was compounded by some bad luck in the form of the oil price increases in the 1970s. And there's a real parallel to that now in which I think there are mistaken ideas floating around in the central banking world, compounded now by bad luck after the Russian invasion of Ukraine.
When you say mistaken ideas?
So I think the mistaken ideas are twofold, really, at present. The first is that people, I think, decided that when the pandemic hit, because output in the economy contracted, the right thing to do was to print a lot more money to stimulate spending, to try and bring demand back up. But that's not what the pandemic was about. The pandemic was about shutting down parts of the economy quite deliberately in order to prevent the spread of the disease. And that meant that if you simply print lots of money at a time when you're producing less, you've got a classic case of too much money chasing too few goods. And the result of that is inflation. And we started to see that last year in 2021. That was the first, I think, mistaken idea. And it's interesting that it was common to all central banks. They basically felt we must demonstrate that we're here, we must do something. But governments were doing a great deal through, in our case, the furlough scheme, which was very sensible. Other governments had their own schemes. This was a very sensible thing to do, but it didn't need central banks to print lots of extra money on top of all that. That's generated a rise in inflation, followed by the mistake, of course, that now, I think, have understandably worried about the impact of the Russian invasion of Ukraine on energy and food prices, which is not the responsibility of central banks. So that's pushed inflation up further, but it would have been above target in any event. It will come down next year and the year after. The question is, will it come down to 2% where it's supposed to be? And the argument of central banks essentially is, well, we're saying it will come down to 2%, so everyone will believe us, and so it will come down to 2%. Well, that's a very odd way of thinking about it. I call that the King Canute theory of inflation. You sit there and you command the forces of the economy to bring inflation down to 2%, irrespective of whether you're prepared to raise interest rates enough to achieve that. And I think the test will be, once we see towards the end of next year how far inflation has come down, central banks may need to do quite a lot more in order to ensure that inflation comes down from what looks like being double-digit level. It will come down, but will it come all the way down to 2%? And simply asserting that because the inflation target is 2%, then it will come down to 2% is not really enough. And most central banks have fallen into that trap, I think, of just believing that because they say it'll come down to 2%, we'll all believe it. And we'll set prices, and wage bargainers will all believe that inflation will be 2%. But why will they believe that when inflation is now close to double-digit level? That's the challenge, I think, and that's a risk.
Do you include the Bank of England in that?
I think all major central banks have fallen prey to the same misconception, that just by stating an inflation target, you build into your models and your forecasts the assumption that inflation in the long run will always come down to 2%. I think that's a real stretch.
But the Bank of England was one of the central banks which did do more quantitative easing, more kind of creation of money in the wake of COVID. So presumably this criticism goes to them as well as the Fed.
It applies to the Bank of England. It applies to the Federal Reserve particularly. And it applies.
They just shouldn't have been printing that extra money.
They shouldn't have been printing the extra money. What governments were doing was enough to deal with the consequences of COVID.
And that, your point is, that has contributed to what we're now seeing in terms of the cost of living.
Yes, and it's true. You can see it with all central banks, that they're now worried about inflation when they weren't before. And it's not all the result of the Russian invasion of Ukraine.
And this was foreseeable, you think?
Yes, it was foreseeable, because it was a mistaken diagnosis of what needed to be done with the pandemic. In March 2020, people argued, well, there's some disruption in financial markets. We better intervene and print money to prevent a collapse of certain financial markets. But that went away within a matter of weeks. And at that point, you would have expected central banks to withdraw the support that they were giving. Rather than withdrawing it, they doubled down and did a lot more. And I think if you just print a great deal of money, it was most extreme in the United States, where the Federal Reserve printed money at a rate that was faster than at any point since the Second World War.
After COVID?
After COVID started, 2020, 2021. You know, their money supply held by businesses and households was growing at 25% a year. Now, you don't have to believe in a mechanical link between that and inflation, but you should be asking yourself the question, yeah, what do we think is going on here? You know, if we keep printing money at this rate, what will happen? And the answer is obvious. You'll get inflation. But people have stopped thinking about it in those simple terms. And they've become obsessed, I think, with complex models, which can be helpful in some circumstances, but it's not a description of how the world works. And I think just asking the simple question, what is going on here, is a very important one to ask, because the pandemic was not like the sort of business cycles we'd seen in the past, where people lose confidence, stop investing and spending. You then cut interest rates to stimulate demand to get back to where the economy can produce. That wasn't the position at all in the pandemic. The governments and households basically decided, well, we're going to stop functioning for a while. And once supply goes down, the worst thing you can do at that point is to increase demand, because there's a real imbalance between the two. And if you stimulate money demand at the same time as output is contracting, the result is going to be inflation. Now, the good news here is that they're not printing money at that rate anymore.
Not anymore.
That stopped. So we can expect inflation to come back down. The real question, I think, is how deep will the recession have to be?
And there will have to be a recession.
I think it's, well, who knows? We may get lucky. We may get lucky. Maybe there's a solution to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. The future's unpredictable. But if inflation doesn't come back down as quickly as central banks hope, and in particular doesn't come back all the way to 2%, but only to, say, 4%, then they'll have to tighten policy further. And the particular worry at present, of course, is that the labour market in Britain is very, very tight. Unemployment, lowest level for 50 years. more vacancies than there are unemployed people for the first time ever.
Which is all good news.
It's good news, but what it means is you can't expect. The supply side of the economy is being really constrained. And this is, you know, with that tighter labour market, with wages rising, you know, anywhere between 5 and 7% a year, with inflation 9% a year and predicted to go higher, interest rates of just 1% don't look as if it's going to be the vehicle for bringing inflation right back down from double-digit levels to 2%.
But at the moment, markets are kind of, you know, expecting, what is it, maybe 2-2.5% in the UK. Is your point that that, to you, doesn't look like enough?
Well, we just don't know. And I think it's a mistake to predict where interest rates will go. That's one of the mistakes central banks have made in the last 10 years, which is to try and tell us where interest rates will go. They don't know, and nor do we. So we have to be prepared for higher interest rates. It's just that if you want to give a very strong and clear statement that we are determined to bring inflation back to the 2% target, you need to do a bit more interest rates now to give a very clear signal that that's what you're prepared to do. I don't think you need to say where rates will go, because I don't think you can know. But you've got a signal that you're prepared to take whatever action is necessary.
So what would just you be doing if you were in the room?
Well, I don't give advice to my successors, and I'm not going to do that.
But nonetheless, I mean, for a very respected former central banker to be making these points, you know, it's quite a serious point you're making about policy, you know, here in the UK and elsewhere as well.
Yeah, and there's a similar debate in the United States, where the Federal Reserve has come under a great deal of criticism for saying, well, we'll raise rates. Now they've changed their tune. They were going to raise rates by 25 basis points, you know, each meeting. That could have left them still behind the curve a year from now. Now they may well make 250 basis points increases in successive meetings. My guess is that that's the minimum that's going to be needed to demonstrate strongly that you are really determined to bring inflation down, irrespective of what happens. Because the big lesson from the 1970s was that the two central banks that were the most determined to bring inflation back down in the 70s and took strong action to do so, the Bundesbank in Germany and the Swiss National Bank, not only were they more successful in bringing inflation down, they actually had the lowest recessions. By tackling inflation early, they prevented the need to keep raising rates in order to create a deeper recession to stop an ingrained wage price spiral pushing inflation up. And that's what's most important. We've been through, you know, 30 years where people have got used to low inflation. They've accepted it. They've stopped talking about inflation. Unless we get back to that as quickly as possible, the risk is that people do start to worry about inflation all the time. And then wages are being pushed up. You get more industrial unrest. And you really need a deep recession in order to bring inflation back down. Let's hope we don't need to do that.
That really is the 1970s.
But that would be the 1970s. Now, we're not there yet, but it will need a very clear statement and signal by central banks to make sure that we don't end up there.
One of the things that you're kind of pointing towards is that, you know, a lot of this stuff was there in the can before the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And actually, it's true. I mean, energy prices, these price cap increases happened before that, even though a lot of people are attributing it to that. So is your point that part of the energy rise in energy costs, which is kind of the big force of momentum here, that this was partly caused by too much QE, too much momentum in the system?
So I think it's very hard to work out, you know, how much was due to that mistake in monetary policy and how much was the result of, you know, specific factors. But what we're seeing now is inflation is spreading, you know, across the economy. It isn't just in one sector. And that's got to be the issue that the bank worries about, stopping it spreading to wage increases and to the service industries and so on. We can see in the United States, which is probably a bit ahead of us in this respect, that their problem now is that inflation has spread well into the service sector, which is the biggest part of the economy. You know, at the beginning, people were talking about, you know, second-hand car prices, etc. It's all one-off effects. Whenever inflation rises, you can always say, oh, it's this price increase or that price increase. No one sits around and all prices go up at the same time. You can always point to particular price increases. the issue really is what's the fundamental force driving higher inflation. And I think we've been through a period in which interest rates have been unnaturally low. The idea that 1% interest rates, even 2% interest rates, should be the norm, I think, is a very odd idea to hold.
Do you have a kind of vague idea of what the norm is in, you know, I'm not asking for a prediction, but I'm asking for your sense as to whether that has shifted from, you know, 5% or so when, you know, back when you were governor to something else now?
I think it's very hard to judge, and I think we'd like to get back to
it. But not 2%. 2% is too low.
I actually think it's too low, and I think it's weak economic growth that has led people to believe that the normal level of interest rates would be a lot lower. And I think that once we can get to a point where we restructure a lot of the debts of businesses that have been able to keep going because they could service their debts at almost negligible interest rates, then we can shift resources from those companies to more productive companies, more productive sectors in the economy. Productivity growth will pick up. And the natural consequence of that is that interest rates, the normal level of interest rates, will itself go back to the sort of level we saw before.
Okay, so yeah, it's not kind of, you know, 2% is the norm forever. I mean, no. Okay.
I mean, one of the interesting things is that whether it's interest rates or whether it's the level of unemployment, people have an idea of what the normal level is because that's what we've experienced. And then it turns out, actually, we go through a period when it looks very different. And everyone says, oh, now it's got a new normal level. But it's always changing. It's always changing. It's just, it's very hard to see how a market economy can function with close to zero interest rates, where you're supposed to use the interest rate to decide which investment project to invest in, where the interest rate needs to be positive to give an incentive to save, to finance that investment, to generate economic growth. Interest rates need to be positive. And positive, having adjusted for inflation, well, at present, they're obviously pretty much negative adjusted for inflation.
When you've talked about a kind of error of policy, but has there also been an error? I mean, I assume the answer is yes, but has there also been an error of forecasting? Because, you know, the bank was forecasting basically flat inflation about a year and a bit ago. And so what's gone wrong there?
Well, a mistake is to believe that you can make accurate forecasts. I mean, economists on the 1st of January each year tend to make forecasts. They're always wrong. But there are good reasons why. Stuff happens. 1st of January 2020, all the economic forecasts published then, you could have torn up a few weeks later with the pandemic. 2021, at the beginning of the year, people were trying to forecast how quickly the economy would come back. We had a second wave. Forecasts, again, didn't make much sense. 1st of January 2022, no one forecast the Russian invasion of Ukraine. They didn't build it into their economic forecast. So these forecasts are always going to be wrong. The more important thing to do is not to pretend that we know that inflation is going to be 3.2% in a particular year, but we try to identify the risks. What are the risks on the upside and the downside? What actions can we take to mitigate those risks? That's what policy is really all about. And if you think about the risks today, the risks are firmly, I think, on the side of inflation becoming more ingrained into the system because we keep talking about it, we expect it to happen, and we adjust our wage demands and our price setting decisions accordingly. And it's very important to try and get back to a world in which we thankfully stop talking about inflation once more.
Is it significant or relevant that this has begun with energy? I mean, does energy play a particular role? A lot of economists kind of almost try not to think about it, just treat it as an input. But is there a significance to the fact that there's, you know, we've got very high energy costs, and does that make it kind of somewhat different, somewhat faster to previous recessions?
Well, I think there are two ways in which it is different. The first one is that it clearly impacts different people in different ways, and it hurts particularly people on low incomes because you cannot change your heating system. You can't just say, oh, gas has gone up in price, maybe I'll switch to it, you know, heat pump or something. You can't do that at all quickly. So you're stuck with it. There's no real action. And these terrible stories of people just switching off the heating illustrate the only course of action they can take. So it affects the welfare of people on low incomes significantly. I think the second is a wider reflection of the same problem. But the real issue here is that we don't produce all the energy ourselves. So we have to import quite a lot. And that means that when energy prices go up, it's a bit like the rest of the world imposing a tax on us as a country. So we're worse off, and there's nothing we can do about that. That makes it much, much harder to provide help and support for those who are hardest hit, because it's going to double down on the hit on people on average incomes or on better off incomes. And there just aren't enough very rich people to tap, to transfer, to keep the rest of us from suffering too much. Everyone basically takes a hit when energy prices go up, and we can talk about how to make it, you know, to help people on low incomes. But the idea that there is any way which as a country we can avoid this problem isn't true when it comes to energy.
It sounds like a particularly toxic cocktail, really.
Well, which is why I said before that when you get an intellectual mistake in policy and you allow inflation to start to rise, if you're then hit by bad luck, which is what happened in the 1970s and has happened now, it becomes something of a very unpleasant outcome. And it takes tough action, and it's not a pleasant period through which we're going to have to go.
It's a failure of economics, is it? Or a failure of conventional...
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I would not blame individuals in central banks. I think it's a failure of the economics profession to believe that...
Well, not the first one, it must be said, in recent decades.
Well, certainly in the 70s we had a similar problem. Now we've got the issue in which people believe that they can produce fancy computer models, and you ask them what determines inflation in your model, and they say the inflation target. And then you say, but surely you can't just announce what inflation will be. It reflects what's going on in the economy, and the models don't take that into account, amazingly. So I do think that this was a mistake of the economics profession, which has spread, understandably, into central banks, which employ the graduates produced by universities, and that they adopt the conventional wisdom of the time. And I think it's misled us on this occasion, followed, as I said, by some bad luck.
Do you think this is a greater challenge than any that you faced when you were governor?
Well, in some ways, I think it probably is, though... I think the similarity...
But you went through, you know, you had the financial crisis.
We had the financial crisis. But I think, in a way, the worse the situation became, the easier it was to know what the answer was. I mean, I think in the financial crisis, it didn't take very long to work out that the banks were undercapitalized, that the banks themselves had borrowed too much. And they were very fragile. And the only way to restore confidence in the banking system was to recapitalize the banks. It took time to persuade everyone to do it, but eventually we got there. Now, I think, again, we know what the problem is. Monetary policy has been too loose. It needs to be tightened. And the problem for central banks is that, for very understandable reasons, they don't want to say, you know, maybe we got it wrong in the last year or so. The obvious piece of advice you give to a central bank today is, I wouldn't start from here.
But
they are, and that's the problem.
And I mean, there's been lots of scrutiny, shall we say, of the Bank of England in the last few weeks. I mean, there's going to be more, isn't there?
Well, there's bound to be more when inflation rises so far above target. But I think the important thing for them is to give very strong, clear signals that they will take action to bring inflation down, and they're going to have to be patient. Just as we were in the financial crisis, the first 6 to 12 months of that were very difficult for the bank. We felt we were doing the right thing, and I think in time we will prove right. I think provided central banks take appropriate action now, they will see a fall in inflation next year. No predictions, but I think this will, you know, it's very likely.
Appropriate action meaning raising interest rates quite considerably.
Well, I don't want to speculate on, you know, how far they should do it, but I think doing something which illustrates that it's not just talking about it, it's actions as
but
well.
But they are raising rates.
They're raising rates. The trouble is at present rates are so low relative to where they ought to be in order to have a chance of bringing inflation back down. And what I hope is that they just don't leave it too long, because then they may end up raising rates, but at the wrong time. You know, this is the time to do it, not in 6 months, 12 months' time, when we may be facing a much, you know, more difficult economic situation.
Put all of this together, and I mean, how concerned are you about Bank of England independence? This is a story that you are, you know, you're a big part of it. You're one of the you know, part of the origin story of
yes.
it in a way.
Well, I don't think there is a threat to legal independence of the Bank of England. I think any government that tried to undo independence would immediately see a very adverse reaction in markets. Government, the rate at which governments could borrow would go up. So I don't think that's a threat. I think what is most important now is that the bank has a very clear and simple narrative. I think don't keep it too complicated, keep it simple, which makes it easier then for governments to support and back the central bank.
Do you worry though that you're by, you know, intervening like this or making these points as you are with your reputation, that might then give those who want to knock the bank more ammunition to take them down?
Well, let me be very clear. I'm criticising the ideas of the economics profession which have come to influence central banks. It's the ideas that are wrong. And I don't criticise individuals in it, because I think you can't blame them for, you know, going along with what is a conventional wisdom. What we need is a debate about the ideas behind all this. And I think that's what's important. And if we can change that narrative somewhat, I think it will be easier for the bank. Because, as I said, if you look ahead, they're not printing money at a rapid rate now. So they have a good story to tell about where inflation is going and why it will come back to the target in due course. But they've got to have that simple narrative, I think, in order to retain the credibility which was built up over a long period since really 1992 and a lot further since independence in 1997. 25 years ago.
Yeah, 25. This is the anniversary. So it's funny how I think at various anniversaries there's been a crisis that we've ended up talking about more than the successes of the past few decades. But
if I look back at my time in the Bank of England, which I joined in 1991, I think there was a crisis every single year in some part of the world, which affected what we were trying to achieve.
But by the way, are you passing this advice on, you know, to colleagues at the bank?
Well, I don't give advice in public, and whether or not I do it in private, I will reflect on it. I'm always there. They know how to get hold of me.